Support for this episode of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere is made possible by the Wessex Press, the premier publisher of books about Sherlock Holmes and his world. Find them online at wessexpress.com. And the Baker Street Journal, the leading publication of Sherlockian scholarship since 1946. Subscriptions available at bakerstreetjournal.com.
I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, episode 134. The Junior Sherlockian Society.
I hear of Sherlock everywhere since you became a chronicler.
In a world where it's always 1895, comes I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, a podcast for devotees of Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the world's first unofficial consulting detective.
I've heard of you before. You're Holmes the meddler, Holmes the busybody, Holmes the Scotland Yard jack in office.
The game's afoot as we discuss goings-on in the world of Sherlock Holmes enthusiasts, the Baker Street irregulars, and popular culture related to the great detective.
As we go to press, sensational developments have been reported.
So join your hosts, Scott Monty and Burt Walder, as they talk about what's new in the world of Sherlock Holmes.
You couldn't have come at a better time!
Well, hello once again. Welcome to I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast for Sherlock Holmes devotees where it's always 1895. I'm Scott Monty.
Yes, you are, and I'm Burt Walder.
And I hope you have your small size clothing with you, folks, because this is the Junior Sherlockian show. You can't just show up in your oversized garb anymore. It's all about thinking small.
Yes, and no one thinks small better than I do. I'm sitting here on my tiny little stool with my short pants and my socks, and I'm ready for the peanut butter sandwich that awaits me at lunch.
You seem like the kind of kid that would have gone to school in the knickerbockers and a little Donald Duck hat. Or am I inferring too much there?
You're not inferring. You're just suggesting that I went to school dressed like a Disney character. Everyone knows I went to school, as any young person did, in my wingtip shoes with my briefcase and New York Times.
Now that I can picture. You had a power tie on, right?
Power tie and, of course, the silk ribbon around my neck that kept my pince-nez handy.
And how many broken shins did you come home with after that? that's a Percy Tadpole Phelps move right there.
Oh, that is. Percy Tadpole Phelps, yes.
Yeah. Watson pretty much as much admitted beating the snot out of Phelps in the playground. That's an aspect of Watson I think that maybe deserves a little more investigation, where he basically admitted to being a schoolyard bully.
Well, it could be. I'm not familiar if there's been any scholarship over the years sort of connecting Watson with Harry Flashman, George MacDonald Fraser's great character, but maybe there has been some.
I think there has been. There's always been an overlap of fandom. If I can use that term, between the two genres, we've seen a number of Sherlockians, particularly at society meetings, who have expressed interest in the Flashman stories.
Well, MacDonald Fraser was a Sherlockian enthusiast. He had Colonel Moran in at least one of his books, I remember.
Yeah, that's right. So, well, I'm sure some enterprising listener will write in or call in and let us know where we've either gone wrong in our assumptions or gone short. So, and if you want to do that, if you want to tell us how wrong we are, we're used to it. We're both married. But in this case, you can write to us.
Get in line, folks. Get in line.
I know, right? You can submit an email to us at comment@ihearofsherlock.com. You can go to the I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere website and leave a comment right in the show notes here for this show, which is available at ihose.co/ihose134. That's the shortened URL for episode 134 here. Of course, you can also send us messages on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Those are the main locations where we have our social media presence. We, of course, are I Hear of Sherlock in every one of those instances. And, well, if you're old enough, right, if you're not a junior Sherlockian and you don't need your mom's help to dial the phone, or maybe you're a senior Sherlockian and you need someone's help to dial the phone, either way, that's done by pressing these numbers in this order, 774-221-7323. Handy way to remember that is 774-221-READ. Oh, that's a fantastic number. And leave us a voicemail and tell us all about everything that concerns you. And I suppose if you really wanted to, you could write us a note 100 times on the chalkboard over and over and over again, just so it gets through our thick skulls.
And be sure to get your felt eraser handy and carefully get all of that chalk off the chalkboard, collect it up, put it in an envelope, and mail it to I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere.
That's how we know.
Canton, Michigan, and enclose 50 cents, and we will soon return an outdated box top to you.
Did you ever have to clap the erasers in school?
There were erasers, certainly, when I was in school, but I don't remember doing that. Yeah.
Oh, well, I must have gotten in trouble more than you. It was penance for disrupting the class, I think. But I remember once or twice having to write something over and over on the chalkboard, and I actually went to the classroom next door, and I got the music staff chalk holder, right, where you could put five pieces of chalk in a row that the music teacher would use to make the musical bars. And I used that to simultaneously write five lines of text. And it was working really well until I got to the last line and the teacher walked in and saw me doing it. And that was the end of that.
I thought you would have gotten special recognition for innovation. That's very clever.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I wanted to get out to recess. So, well, let's take a slight recess here, shall we? And hear from our friends at Wessex Press.
There's excitement in the ancient Anglo-Saxon kingdom of Wessex. We're looking forward to Modron Eat, our winter solstice festival, marking the start of our new year. But there's no need for you to wait to celebrate, not when you can buy Sherlock Holmes and Conan Doyle in the newspapers, Volume 3. This impressive collection covers July to December 1893, the most important and controversial 6 months in the history of Sherlock Holmes, his so-called death at the Reichenbach Falls, and the public's reaction. Available right now at WessexPress.com. Friends, it will soon be upon us, the bleak midwinter, when frosty wind makes moan, and earth stands hard as iron, water like a stone, when snow is falling, snow on snow. What better time to reach for the pleasure only a volume from the Wessex Press can provide? Choose yours today.
Oh, well. Back from recessing, or is that the recession?
Oh, I hope we're a long way away from the recession.
Yeah, well, indeed. Indeed. Well, speaking of recess and all things classroom related, we are delighted to be joined in this episode by Shannon Carlisle, a Beacon Award winning teacher, who is also the chair of the Junior Sherlockian Committee for the Beacon Society. And if you're not aware of the Beacon Society and the Junior Sherlockian Society, both are associated with bringing Sherlock Holmes and young people together. And I think there's no one better to tell us all about that than Shannon Carlisle. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be a participant on I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere.
Well, we're excited to have you here and excited to talk about your influence with the younger generation. And speaking of younger, why don't you go with us now back in your mind and tell us about the first time that you met Sherlock Holmes?
Well, as a child, I was a reluctant reader. However, in fifth grade, my teacher introduced me to several novels, which finally fueled my desire to read. And both novels were mysteries. When reading from the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Baisley Frankweiler, I longed to be living in the Metropolitan Museum of Art with Claudia Kincaid and her brother. I also wanted to live in Sunset Towers with the characters of the Westing game and unravel the mystery behind Mr. Westing's death. So with this new passion for mysteries, I read several Sherlock Holmes stories as a youth. But I really didn't become a Sherlock Holmes enthusiast until the year 2011.
What happened then?
In 2011, my charge at my elementary school changed. I had been the fourth grade teacher for years, and my classroom was the garden. I was the kid gardener charged with nurturing the needs of my seeds. And then I was asked to become the accelerated learning teacher. And with this new position, I thought I needed a new theme. I needed a theme that would encourage my students to employ the mindset and skills needed for growth, a theme that would provide an engaging framework for our advanced learners, and I needed a theme that would support my students in their attempts to be productive citizens. So my classroom became 221B Baker Street. My classroom is Sherlock Holmes's home, and I teach my students the Sherlockian mindset. Think and act like Sherlock Holmes, and you'll become a better student. And I teach them the Sherlockian skills. Be observant, be an active participant in your learning, and be a critical thinker.
Mm. So, Shannon, what was that the first Sherlock Holmes story you read?
It was Blue. My second was Red, The Redheaded League. I chose both of those stories because those were ones I could definitely share with elementary school kids, at least the abridged versions of them.
How old were you when you read these for the first time?
I was in junior high and then reread them as an adult as I prepared to share them with my third and fourth graders.
Oh, do you remember what you thought when you were in junior high and came across this? Because you said you were a reluctant reader.
Oh.
You very seldom hear that. What were you doing instead of reading? Were you into sports or art or comic books or?
What was I involved in? As a child, I enjoyed sports, and so I played softball. I enjoyed participating in the choir. I was a musician. I played the clarinet. And later in marching band, I was in the color guard. I enjoyed outside of school activities more than school itself.
So have you come across reluctant readers in your own profession with the students you teach?
Yes, I have. And I feel very fortunate to have not only Sherlock Holmes to introduce them to, but there are many other fabulous mysteries that engage my reluctant readers. When they're searching for the unknown, usually they won't put that book down.
But what happened to you? I mean, I'm very intrigued because someone who describes himself as a reluctant reader who then becomes – who wasn't really very interested in school, who was enjoying more things outside of school, and who then becomes a school teacher. I mean, it sounds like you were probably on a little bit of a mission to correct some of the examples that you had when you were in school that, were really less positive for you.
I would often sit in school and analyze, critique my teachers, and in my mind determine maybe a better way that that information could have shared. I looked around me at the students who were similar to me, who were more daydreamers, and tried to determine maybe the best way to engage. But it is unique that I became a teacher because I didn't enjoy school that much. I had some perfectionistic issues, but once I realized that I could just pursue excellence, I felt more comfortable with my learning.
So in this day and age, you know, we have so many different versions, I guess you could say, of Sherlock Holmes. We've certainly had many versions over the course of the years, but now I think access to many different Sherlock Holmes is available for many, many people. So when it comes to these reluctant readers and finding a hook for them, finding the right story that works for them or the right theme, have you experimented at all with multimedia, with film, with television, with online, with any of your students?
I've done more of that as I created the Junior Sherlockian Society. But in the classroom, I've just introduced them to different adapted versions of the stories. Judith Conway wrote The Mysteries of Sherlock Holmes, and her adapted Blue and the Red-Headed League are very intriguing for my second graders. And then with my third graders, I introduced them to the classic starts, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes by Chris Soseski, and his adapted versions of Blue and the Red-Headed League have been fabulous for my third graders. And then finally, with my fourth graders, I introduced them to On the Case with Holmes and Watson, number 7, which is the graphic novel of Sherlock Holmes and the Red-Headed League, written and illustrated by Murray Shaw and M.J. Cawson and Sophie Rohrbach and T.J. Morrow.
That's fascinating. I never knew about that. Well, all of those adaptations, really. I think that's that's fascinating.
I should address this. In my classroom, since I teach first through fourth graders, I avoid blood, guts, and weaponry. And so if the story includes blood, guts, or weaponry, I just don't share it. And even as I was creating the Junior Sherlockian program and creating a pastiche list, if there was blood, guts, or weaponry, that book was placed under the middle grade section of the pastiche list.
Got it.
So, yeah. And that was actually one of the struggles of creating a Junior Sherlockian Society, because I want to make sure whatever content we put out there would be appropriate for a first grader through an eighth grader.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because, you know, even Conan Doyle, when he wrote, well, when the memoirs went into the collected version, the book version, he excised the cardboard box, because it was a little too risque. There certainly was blood and guts, or in that case, blood and ears. And it involved adultery. So he thought that it just wasn't right for the time, and he put it in, I think he put it in his last bow later on in the 1900s. So
yeah, and then there's also the speckled band. You know, years ago, I introduced that to my eldest daughter when she was much younger, and I was unprepared for how disturbed she was by that plot, because as an adult, you know, I just was not thinking about it from her perspective.
Right.
I actually attempted that with third graders, and it was too intense, especially my students, because their thinking is so advanced, and it just got a little bit too much for my students. So I don't even use the speckled band in my classroom.
Well, things you have to consider when you're entertaining young minds, right?
Yes.
So Shannon, help us understand the path here. So it seems like there was one path about you as a teacher in your classroom and your interest in this school of writing in mystery fiction and in Sherlock Holmes, and then sort of the separate path around the creation of the Junior Sherlockian Society. So how did all this come together?
Yes.
Well, first of all, am I right? Is that really?
Yes. No, that's correct. And even I would like to share a little bit of information about the Beacon Society. So we have the Beacon Society that was founded in the year 2003, and it is a Scion Society of the Baker Street Irregulars. And our mission is twofold. It's to encourage teachers and librarians to use Sherlock Holmes to engage young people in the pleasures of reading, and it's also to recognize exemplary educational experiences that introduce young people to Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. So knowing that, May 2016, Bill Mason, who is the headlight of the Beacon Society, received an email from Andy Solberg. And Andy Solberg encouraged the Beacon Society to form a Sherlockian Society for children and youth. And as a child, Andy participated in the National Parks Junior Ranger program, and his experience was quite memorable. So a few months later, Peggy Perdue, the Beacon Society's program committee chair, shared Andy's suggestion with her committee. And at that point, Dr. Marino Alvarez contacted me, and he encouraged me to submit a proposal. Because Dr. Alvarez is a frequent guest speaker in my classroom. I mean, since my classroom's 221B Baker Street, we invite him in often. In fact, he comes in every December to help us evaluate Blue. He helps us analyze the plot of that whimsical little incident and challenges us to recall the details with his cryptograph. But he said, and he encouraged me to submit a proposal for a junior Sherlockian society that not mimicked what I was doing in the classroom, but definitely allowed children outside of my classroom to understand and appreciate the great detective. When I shared my conversation with Dr. Alvarez with my husband, he immediately said, I'll build you a website if you develop the program and the content.
Hey, there's a deal.
I know. So he's So he's the founder and CEO of Big Heart Creative, which is a digital strategy and development company. So with that, I did submit a proposal at the end of July 2016, and by mid-August, the Beacon Society board unanimously approved the Junior Sherlockian Society as an official program of the Beacon Society.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
So we should pause here for a moment, because I know you're not going to toot your own horn, so it's really up to us.
No.
We should mention that in getting involved with the Beacon Society, you are actually a recipient of the Beacon Award. And for those folks who aren't familiar, the Beacon Society exists to help introduce young people to Sherlock Holmes and recognize people who are doing an exemplary job of doing so. The Beacon Award is on that recognition path. And for the last few years, there's actually been a monetary award that's been associated with it. So every year, and I think that we've passed the deadline this year, November 15th is the cutoff date. Educators and people who are involved in their community have an opportunity to submit their material and say, look, here's my my body of work. Here's how I approach introducing young people to Sherlock Holmes. And then the committees look it over and decide on who is worthy of an award that year. And you were, in fact, that recipient in 2014.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
And was this specific to anything in your classroom, or was it just the entire, process that you go through?
It is because of my classroom theme. In my classroom, I also have the 17 Scotland Yard police ranks of 1895. I have done the research, and there are 17 police ranks. And when my students embrace those skills, when they're observant and active participants in their learning and critical thinkers, they move up the police ranks. Even the physical environment of my classroom embraces my theme. So I have nods to Sherlock Holmes and Victorian London and the British culture in my room. Well, even outside of my room, the hallway signs include Baker Street signs. My classroom door is the door of the great detective. You come in and there are Lego models of, Tower Bridge and Big Ben and Parliament. There are signs students have made for me, home sweet homes, and keep calm, be jocund. Above my Promethean board at the front of the classroom is the quote, well, Watson, we can but try, encouraging my students to have that growth mindset. I love this. At the beginning of every class period, my students recite Russell McLaughlin's poem, How Can You Get to Baker Street? So each child has a section, a portion of the poem, and they recite it. And if there's a break in the recitation, then I know someone is absent.
Uh-oh.
At the beginning of every school year, all fourth graders in my school participate in Sherlockian training. And I just happen to know that a crime will always be committed on the first Monday of the school year. And so I invite my students in and I introduce them to the beginnings of a scandal in Bohemia. And I tell them they must observe, not just see, but observe the crime scene. So we observe a crime scene on Monday. On Tuesday, my students are read the detective's notes from her suspect interviews. On Wednesday and Thursday, we go to our science lab, our forensics lab, and we complete science experiments to learn a little bit more about the crime that's been committed. And then by Friday, the students, the junior Sherlockians in training, have solved the crime and are deemed Sherlockians. In fact, for a few years there, our school resource officer participated in the trainings, and he actually purchased shillings for every fourth grader that participated in the training. Before he left my elementary school, he had purchased over 150 shillings. Wow. For my students.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So we read the canon. We read pastiches. And then one of my favorite projects is we have created the Sherlock Holmes Museum for the Young and Curious Mind in my classroom. For a few years there, Francine Kitts and Al Gregory were sending me trinkets to share with the students, because after we read an abridged version of one of the stories, I would give them an abridged Bill Dorn quiz. And those who did the best on the quiz would receive a trinket. But some of the trinkets were so nice, I didn't want them going home with the students. I wanted to save them in the classroom to share with younger Sherlockians or future Sherlockians who came through 221B Baker Street. And so now we have the Sherlock Holmes Museum for the Young, Curious, and Observant Mind. And each year my fourth graders choose an artifact and complete the research and write an interpretive label to display with the artifact in the museum.
That's fantastic.
Well, it's wonderful. And those of our listeners who are frequenters of the IHearOfSherlock.com website can go back to our post, Sherlock Holmes in the Classroom by Derek Berlanger, on August 2nd of 2016, and see you and the 221B Door and Dr. Marino Alvarez and a little bit of what your classroom looks like. It's wonderful. I love the crime scene.
Yes. Yes. It is. It's amazing how I know that a crime will always be committed each year, the beginning of the year.
You must have foresight. But now here's something that I really want to, that called out to it, called out to me when you were just talking about all this. How is it that your students know the proper definition of the word jocund?
Because we study the poem. It's William Wordsworth.
Oh, I wandered lonely as a cloud.
Yes. We study that in second grade, and I do have the sign, keep calm and carry on, and it's near my door. And when I want my students to line up to move on to the next classroom, I say, keep calm and carry on. Well, one of my students, after studying the poem, I wandered lonely as a cloud, changed it to keep calm and be jocund.
Oh, I like that.
That's
a lot.
Impressive.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
For those of you who are listening and who are just immediately consulting your dictionaries, you will know, of course, that a jocund means cheerful and lighthearted.
Yes.
And what better word to introduce in school? I think that's wonderful. Christopher Morley would be delighted.
So do the parents of these students know what they're getting into before they arrive?
Yes, they do. In fact, every 4.5 weeks, I send home our current investigations from 221B Baker Street. And so they know that I'm teaching their children to think and act like Sherlock Holmes to be better students.
That's wonderful. So, and have you hooked any parents along the way?
Yes, I have.
Uh-huh.
In fact, one of my students completed research for me at one point, and as he was completing his research, he said, "I sure hope this research was completed thoroughly enough so that I'm invited to become a part of the Nashville Scholars of the Three Pipe Problem." Because at that point, I had already become a member of the Scion, and they had already heard about my stories, my adventures with the group. Well, Dr. Alvarez came into my classroom that next week, and I had mentioned that to Dr. Alvarez. Well, Dr. Alvarez invited this student to the group. This student is now the Redheaded League of the Nashville Scholars of the Three Pipe Problem, and he chose that canonical name because that was the first story he was introduced to in third grade in my classroom. His father is now the handsome cab of our group because Connor is still just a freshman in high school. He can't drive.
Wow.
But his father drives him to our meetings.
That's
so
great.
His father's the handsome cab.
That is wonderful.
Yes.
Well, that's actually how I got my start in the Men on the Tour up in Connecticut. My father had to drive me to the first few meetings because I was still underage. So I get it. I get it.
You and Connor need to sit down and have tea and share your experiences.
That's great. So, I mean, that's a wonderful intergenerational story that you've got there. But as you have taught your classroom, and how long have you been teaching, Shannon?
20 years.
So you probably have some instances of students that you taught years ago that are now, you know, embarking on their own careers. Do you have any Sherlockian success stories or just student success stories that you're particularly proud or fond of?
I truly enjoy social media because I can now be friends with those former students, and I just love seeing them moving on and becoming productive citizens. In my classroom, I tell my students, you have each been given this wonderful brain. Now what are you going to do with it? We talk about our dreams a lot, and I say, you better believe in your dreams and you better do something about it, and you better think, use that great mind you've been given. So believe, do, think. Those three words are printed around my classroom and on their tables. And so I guess just I appreciate the opportunities to see how they've become productive citizens in life.
Well, of course, the danger is as you're ensuring that a crime is committed every year, you might actually be educating a future swarm of crime committers rather than just detectives.
I do have classrooms of clever students, and I encourage them to use that great mind they've been given to be a productive citizen in society.
Well, I think, you know, that's wonderful that believe, think, do.
Mm-hmm. Do,
you know,
yes.
It's a simple phrase. It's easy to remember, and yet it packs so much power. And when you think of everything that we have read about the life of Sherlock Holmes, that is exactly what he did. He didn't go to school to become a detective. He managed to, you know, kind of discern his own path, following his beliefs, certainly using his mind to think like no one, before him, and then going out and actually applying himself and putting all this to work.
Yes. In fact, the whole application piece, so I encourage my students to be productive citizens, and there are so many Sherlockian groups that have supported my students in that. For instance, the Adventuresses of Sherlock Holmes, they've published my students' work 3 times now. And so my students are not only productive citizens, well, my students are learning they can be productive citizens at 9 and 10 years old. And how powerful is that?
It is. So let's talk specifically about the Junior Sherlockian Society for a bit, because this is fascinating. You're offering people, young people, a chance to get Junior Sherlockian training. And you've got a method with 221B tasks. You want to tell us about that?
Yes. So on the 221st day of this year, on August 9th, 2017, the Beacon Society launched JuniorSherlockian.com. And on the site, we invite children and youth to complete Junior Sherlockian training. And to complete the training, they complete the 221B tasks. Two tasks to explore the world of Sherlock Holmes, two tasks to experience the canon, and one task to extend their understanding and appreciation of the great detective.
What can you give us some examples of what some of the explore and experience tasks would consist of?
Yes. So when our junior Sherlockians in training explore the world of Sherlock Holmes, when they are introduced to the great detective, they may choose to read The World of Sherlock Holmes essay by Francine Kitts. Mm. And in the essay, they are introduced to Sherlock Holmes's creator, the grand game in Sherlockians. They may choose to read Sherlock Holmes's resume created by Dr. Marino Alvarez. I mean, if Sherlock Holmes had to apply for his position as a consulting detective, what would his resume reveal? And Alvarez shares his background information, skills, and talents. A junior Sherlockian in training may choose to study the language, imagery, and structure of 221B, the poem by Vincent Sterrett, and read the analysis by Susan Diamond and Francine Kitts. Or they may even choose to read the Baker Street Elementary comics by Joe Fay, Steve Mason, and Rusty Mason. And those comics chronicle Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson's adventures if they had attended the same grade school. Now, also under Explore the World of Sherlock Holmes, they may choose to watch any of the five animated movies and TV shows we have listed. So we listed The Great Mouse Detective and Tom and Jerry Meet Sherlock Holmes, Sherlock Pink, Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd Century, and the TV show Sherlock Hound, where Sherlock Hound is a corgi and Dr. Watson is a terrier, and they pursue a variety of thieves in steampunk London. Now, to experience the canon, we encourage them to listen or read two of the 60 stories. And again, for our younger junior Sherlockians in training, we really encourage them to read the abridged versions of The Adventure of the Blue Carbuncle and The Red-Headed League. And then they need to extend their understanding and appreciation of the great detective by completing one task. And they may read or listen to a Sherlockian pastiche, or read the 10 Rules for Writing a Sherlockian Pastiche by Derek Bellinger, and then write one of their own. They may attend a local Scion Society meeting, or after reading The Adventure of the Blue Carbuncle, retell that whimsical incident using Chris Schweizer's paper dolls. They may perform Dr. Marino Alvarez's play, The Red-Headed League, practice their observational skills of trifles by geocaching, which is that real-world outdoor treasure hunting game using a GPS-enabled device. They may develop their observational and reasoning skills by solving Graham Bass's 11th Hour, a curious mystery, or Enigma, a magical mystery. Or they may choose to read issues of Baker Street Elementary's Life and Times in Victorian London by Joe Fay, Lise Sherwood Fabre, Rusty Mason, and Steve Mason. Now, once our junior Sherlockians in training explore the world of Sherlock Holmes and experience the canon and extend that understanding and appreciation of the great detective, we want to recognize them for their efforts. Oh. They will be recognized for their efforts. And they identify the 221B tasks they completed during their training.
That's wonderful. And then what happens after they submit all of this material?
Okay. So once they've submitted their training evidence checklist, and they also, because we value truthfulness and we operate on the honor system, they must click a box saying they agree that they've faithfully completed the tasks, then a 221B key unlocks the certificate of completion, and it's a downloadable for the junior Sherlockian to print. And it reads, the bearer of this certificate completed an in-depth study of Sherlock Holmes's character traits, observational skills, capacity for critical thought, and inductive and deductive reasoning, and therefore is deemed a junior Sherlockian by the Beacon Society, a Scion Society of the Baker Street Irregulars.
And that's wonderful.
Yeah. Now, because of the Children's Online Privacy Protection Rule, the Junior Sherlockian Society avoids the collection of children's names, ages, birthdays, and addresses. So if we collected any of those, we determined it would pose significant or could pose significant liability issues for the Beacon Society. Mm. IP addresses are not even collected as a user moves throughout the site. Mm. So my husband has added an IP address purge.
Got it. So how many students or young folks in the past couple of months have you had already joined the Junior Sherlockian Society?
So because we don't collect the names and ages and birthdays and addresses, I don't have that information, but I can say that our site averages about 200 visits a day.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
That's great. Well, we'll hope to boost that up a little bit.
That would be fabulous.
Yeah, we'll have all the things we've been talking about, all of the links, the Beacon Society, the Junior Sherlockian Society, even the Wordsworth poem. We will have links to those in the show notes, which you can find at ihose.co/ihose134. Those will be in the show notes associated with this episode.
I would also like to plug that at the base of our website, juniorsherlockian.com, we have a resources section. Mm. And so you can print a promotional bookmark and poster, and you can share those with any young person you think would enjoy Junior Sherlockian training. We also now have a Facebook group, and it's not for the trainees. It's for any supporter of a trainee. It's for the adult who is helping his or her young person through the Junior Sherlockian program.
Got it. Well, we'll include that too. That's great.
Thank you. Thank you.
So where do you see this going?
Well, at our last Beacon Society meeting in New York City, Bill Mason shared information about the Beacon Society and just said he can't wait to hear stories down the road of members of Sherlockian societies that got their roots, got their start on juniorsherlockian.com. So we're hoping to see a domino effect of more and more children being exposed to Sherlock Holmes through this site. And then just over time, like we know within our own societies, we bring in friends. And so it'll be fun to see over time how many folks this affects. I just also wanted to thank all of my consultants and committee members. So while I was creating and collecting the content for this program, I had two consultants. Connor, my former student, who's now a freshman in high school, he was my student consultant, and he reviewed the content and gave me great suggestions. He really encouraged me to add the animated movies and TV shows to the Explore the World of Sherlock Holmes. I also had Michael Brady as my middle school educator consultant, and he was our 2015 Beacon Award winner. Now I have a Junior Sherlockian Society committee, Kathy Brunke, Alex Katz, Greg Ruby, and my in-house, both literally and figuratively, web developer and graphic designer Matt Carlisle are part of that committee that are helping me promote this site.
It takes a village.
It does, doesn't it?
Well, Shannon, this has been very, dare I say, educational. And a lot of fun just to hear about your journey and, the incredible amount of work that goes into, what it is that you do, not only professionally, but of course on the side here with, the Junior Sherlockian Society.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate your time and this opportunity just to promote this, this program.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, it means a lot. You know, I mean, the issue of engaging children in imaginative work, in creative writing, in reading, in acquiring knowledge from reading, in sharing their reading experiences. I mean, this is sort of a recurring theme as an educational challenge, and you've put together a lovely answer that addresses it square on, and it's dear to the hearts of all of us. So it's really very special.
Yes. Well, thank you. You're right. It is an engaging framework for learning. So.
Well, best of luck to you and all that you continue to do. And I hope folks will check out juniorsherlockian.com for the Junior Sherlockian Society and beaconsociety.com for the Beacon Society.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. You know, the structure of it is just remarkable. You know, the fact that you have I suppose we didn't precisely define it, but Shannon and everyone who's been involved in helping her, Francine Kitz and Andrew Solberg and Dr. Marino Alvarez, they've built really quite a curriculum for doing this. Quite something.
Yeah, they really have. And the Beacon Society has really grown to such maturity over the last, almost 15 years now. You know, this was the brainchild of Maribou Briggs. She and I were actually talking over drinks during a BSI weekend back in the early 2000s. And she had this germination. You know, we need to do something for young people. We don't want this pastime to go out to pasture, as it were. And lo and behold, the Beacon Society was formed. And over the years, just the curriculum has matured. The degree of the award winners has increased every year. I mean, their ability to put programs like this together. You can tell they do this out of a love for Sherlock Holmes, because no one's doing this for, for a living, really. It's simply because they love doing it, and the energy that they put into it is absolutely astounding. Well, if you still have the energy to follow along, Sherlockian scholarship, and all the like, that can be found in the pages of the Baker Street Journal.
One of the benefits of this podcast is that we bring you behind the scenes with some of the editors of the many volumes of the Baker Street Irregulars Press. Indeed, you've been treated to one such interview on this very episode. But there's so much more to find than just this particular volume. A quick visit to the Baker Street Journal website finds Out of the Abyss, a facsimile of the manuscript of The Empty House with commentary. G.K. Chesterton's Sherlock Holmes, facsimiles of 19 original unpublished drawings illustrating the Sherlock Holmes canon, together with Chesterton's own writings on Sherlock Holmes and appreciations of Chesterton by leading scholars. Angels of Darkness, a drama in three acts, a facsimile edition of a portion of the manuscript and a complete transcript of the previously unpublished manuscript. Together, these form the basis of a fine collection. Individually, they stand as excellent examples of Sherlockian scholarship and an enduring record of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's artistry. Isn't it time you dug deeper than simply reading the Sherlock Holmes stories? Head on over to BakerStreetJournal.com and begin your journey with the BSI Press today.
Always good to hear about the Baker Street Journal. It's always a treat to find it in the mailbox.
It is. It is. And I'll tell you what, the thing that's impressed me, in addition to just the sustained quality of scholarship that continues there, and we're approaching 2018 here. It's been, 70 years the BSJ has been around, is the covers, the cover art has been phenomenal. You know, it used to be the same William Gillette profile that Frederick Dorr Steele drew. Same cover, quarter in and quarter out. And now you've got some great interpretations of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson on every cover. So that alone is worth the price of admission.
Yes, and that's in living color, friends.
It is. It is. Well, we are rapidly approaching the end of the show here, and I suppose it's worth noting that if you have appreciated what we've done here, we would appreciate your appreciation through Patreon or PayPal. Either way, you can set up a recurring donation to show us how much you appreciate each and every one of these episodes, and there's no one better to tell our story than John Raby.
Hi, everybody. My name is John Raby. I'm the son of the late Wilmer T. Bill Raby, BSI, Colonel Warburton's Madness, recipient of the Two Shilling Award. Scott and Bert are many things. They are erudite hosts of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere. They are eminent Sherlockians. They are fun and edifying to listen to, but they are lousy fundraisers. They let you off the hook much too easily. Trust me, I know. I've been in public radio for 30 years. I could sell a mug to a mugger, a tote bag to Nina Totenberg. Scott and Bert's problem is that they're just too nice. They ask you to give, gently, like once or twice every podcast. They say stuff like, if you want to. That won't do. Let's try this. Go over to the I Hear of Sherlock website and click on the support button. There you go. That's nice. Looking at the screen here, it's nice that they have a $1 per episode donation option. That's not the one you should click. That's basically $1 per month. That's the one for kids with a paper route. You need to start at $5 per episode, which boils down to $1.25 a week for the best Sherlock Holmes podcast out there. If you can do more, that's great. I'm personally in for $10 a month, which is just $2.50 a week. The formula is simple. I Hear of Sherlock is a show that's supported by listeners. You listen. You're listening right now. So, put the two together. You need to give. So please go to IHearOfSherlock.com and be as generous as you can and do it right now. Now, back to your two nice hosts, Scott and Bert.
You know, I'm still astounded that we got somebody from NPR to cut a spot for us like that. Well, we didn't get him to do it. He volunteered it. Because he heard how horrible we were as fundraisers.
What a guy.
Oh, but I love that he is the son of a former Baker Street irregular. Anyway, it's been wonderful to spend this hour with you, and that you've allowed us to do that. And if anything here has really struck you, you know, whether it's Shannon's sharing of what she does as a profession or of what she and the Beacon Society have put together with the Junior Sherlockian Society, or you just want to get in touch with us, feel free to reach out and let us know. We can certainly convey your wishes to Shannon and to other listeners around the world. And until we meet here again next time, I am Scott Monty.
I'm Bert Wolder.
The game's afoot.
I'm afraid that in the pleasure of this conversation, I'm neglecting business of importance, which awaits me elsewhere.
Thank you for listening. Please be sure to join us again for the next episode of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast dedicated to Sherlock Holmes.
Goodbye, and good luck, and believe me to be, my dear fellow, very sincerely yours, Sherlock Holmes.